From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2004 when the Oprah Winfrey Show welcomed Dr. Mehmet Oz for a segment. It was a big hit, and it didn't take long for Dr. Oz to gain a following. By 2009, he launched his own afternoon show. Now, in so many ways, Dr. Oz has proven to be a contradiction. He is a cardiac surgeon and a very highly regarded one. He's operated on President Bill Clinton. He's worked hard to make sure he can keep practicing and keep current, despite his growing media celebrity. Dr. Oz has also become a lightning rod with his colleagues because he so often touts products on his show with no scientific or research backing. He uses grandiose terms all the time, announcing the newest miracle cure or a fat buster that won't require exercise. In 2014, Congress called on Dr. Oz to stop doing that kind of thing. It hasn't had much effect. Oz has said that he uses this kind of language because if he simply talked about straightforward facts and medicine, it wouldn't hold viewers' attention. This month, the White House announced that Dr. Oz will serve on the President's Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition. That sparked some pushback from the medical community, but Dr. Oz remains a hugely popular figure in this country. This hour, our guests will talk about the importance of good science in medicine, weight loss, and the Dr. Oz effect on public knowledge of medicine. In studio, we welcome Dr. Bob Cole, Medical Director for the Rochester Regional Health Primary Care and Ambulatory Specialties Institute. Dr. Cole, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, and Dr. Elizabeth Murray is here, who is... I'm looking at a title, and I'm not even sure it's right. You have so many. But what title do you prefer, Dr. Murray? Introduce yourself.
I'm a pediatrician at Golisano Children's Hospital.
Okay. That's good enough for now. And you're not on the President's Council, as far as I know.
I am not, though I am on the People Magazine Health Squad.
You see?
So full disclosure there.
There you go. Do you believe in miracle cures?
No.
Okay. Dr. Cole?
I have to say, I agree with Elizabeth that I do not. I have not seen many of them.
Now, we're going to have a little fun this hour, but we're also going to get serious about medical science and research. And I recognize at the outset here that Dr. Oz remains a hugely popular figure in this country. And I don't want anyone to sort of, my mother, you know, is a huge Dr. Oz fan. I will call my mom in the afternoon and she'll say, "You can't call during Dr. Oz or Dr. Phil." And I'll say, "Mom, we haven't talked in like a week." She'll say, "Call me back." So I'm with you. There's a lot of people who really like it. And I wonder, Dr. Cole, I will start with you, why you think Dr. Oz is so popular.
You know, Evan, I was thinking about the content of today's program, and I have to admit that, you know, perhaps in the last several years, I've seen maybe one or two of Dr. Oz's programs. As a practicing physician, I don't have a ton of time during the course of the day. So I'm not sure I can speak to, Dr. Oz himself, but certainly the issue of, understanding what's scientific and what's junk science is an issue that I deal with each day, you know, in my primary care practice, and very happy to talk about that aspect of providing primary care services.
That's so important. In fact, we're going to ask both of our guests as the hour goes on here how often they encounter. Patients, people, maybe family members who have ideas that are clearly junk science but might come from, and it's not just Dr. Oz, from many different sources. And if that's proliferated over the years, I'm very curious about that. Dr. Murray, any ideas for why this Dr. Oz phenomenon has been so popular in the last decade?
Well, first of all, he has phenomenal credentials. I mean, he is, all evidence will show us, a very capable physician. So that, I think, is really
important. And I wanted
to
emphasize that from the outset.
Yeah, he is certainly a very capable individual in the medicine world. But he also speaks in a clear way that people can understand. And he speaks to what people want to know about. Everybody wants to lose weight in a miracle pill kind of way. They want to know the things that they can do to live longer, save their lives, make everything easier and better. So if you play into that role, you're going to get people wanting to listen.
Yeah, and my first take when I hear him say, well, you know what, let's listen to him in his own words in a couple of different places here. I'll play a couple of clips so you can get more of a sense of what Dr. Oz is saying here. First is Dr. Oz featured on John Oliver's show in 2014. Dr. Oz had just talked to Congress, and this is the John Oliver show on HBO having a little fun but kind of needling Dr. Oz for the grandiose language he uses. Let's listen to this clip.
Do you believe that there's a miracle pill out there?
There's not a pill that's going to help you long-term lose weight and live the best life without diet and exercise.
Do you believe there's a magic weight loss cure out there?
It, the word, if you're selling something because it's magical, no.
Right, right. That would be ridiculous. No one is claiming there's a magic pill out there. That would be stupid.
This little bean has scientists saying they found the magic weight loss cure for every body type.
See? He never said there was a magic pill. He said there was a magic bean.
So that's the John Oliver show. Let's listen to a little bit more of Dr. Oz's actual exchange with Senator Claire McCaskill. Again, this is 2014, a congressional hearing, and the audio starts with Claire McCaskill talking to Dr. Oz.
I don't get why you need to say this stuff, because you know it's not true. So why, when you have this amazing megaphone and this amazing ability to communicate, why would you cheapen your show?
I actually do personally believe in the items that I talk about in the show. I passionately study them. I recognize that oftentimes they don't have the scientific muster to present as fact, but nevertheless, I would give my audience the advice I give my family all the time, and I've given my family these products.
So he's telling Congress, Dr. Coley's saying, I realize the science isn't behind him, but I'm going to do it anyway. Is that good enough for you there?
No. I was actually speaking to Elizabeth before the show. And I think, one of the things that's interesting to consider is that, when you're working with a physician or a healthcare professional in a one-to-one setting, it's pretty clear that, he or she has your best interest in mind. I think when we all interact with physicians or healthcare professionals through the media, it's often hard to know, for certain whether your best interest is their top priority. It could be that they have a marketing priority. It could be that they have a promotions priority. It could be that there's a for-profit priority. So that's something that I think we need to be aware of.
Okay. Dr. Murray?
Yeah, we live in a time where we have almost unlimited access to information, but it's not necessarily unlimited access to facts, and opinions are not necessarily facts, and that's become very cloudy as of late. And so when you hear something by a popular person, just like when you were in third grade, when you heard something by a popular person, it might be more attractive. And, as time marches on and we have less and less time to spend with our patients, and that bond and that relationship perhaps deteriorates because you're only spending 10 or 15 minutes, where in the years past, maybe we had 45 minutes or an hour. It's harder to build that relationship and build that trust. So I think this is a symptom of an overall degradation of the patient-physician relationship. This isn't just looking for a miracle cure. This is, we're looking for information. We want to get other resources, and he just happens to have something that sounds pretty great.
Yeah, I want to appeal to our listeners as we go throughout the hour. Have you maybe found yourself buying into some of these claims? Have you taken a lot of the supplements that, and we'll talk about some of the supplements that have been hawked by the likes of people like Dr. Oz. Have you found yourself going down that road, and have you had interaction maybe with family members who insisted, like I have? And by the way, I love you, Mom. This is not throwing my own mother under the bus. My mom's one of the smartest people I know. She just loves Dr. Oz and Dr. Phil. And a lot of people do. But let us know. 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. So Dr. Bob Cole mentioned encountering junk science. Do you encounter more of it from either patients or family than you used to?
Yeah, I think so. I think what Dr. Murray has said is correct. There is a we are inundated with information today, not just providers, but patients and their families. And there's a lot of noise out there, Evan. There's a lot of noise. And part of our job is to help, help separate the fact from the noise. So it's not uncommon in the course of a clinical day to, be approached, many times with questions about supplements, vitamins, the latest interventions for common disorders. And we do spend a fair amount of time each day trying to address those questions.
Is there a most common pseudoscience, junk science idea that you hear?
I wouldn't say that there's a single question that I hear repeatedly. It is really very, it's quite varied.
Okay, Dr. Murray, is there a most
vaccines.
Common
vaccines?
Well, for you and your line of work, yeah.
Vaccines, okay. Most definitely. I mean, that's far and wide. Though I will say this, I do encounter a lot of people just not understanding basic information about our bodies. I think that we have never done a really great job of making sure people understand their own bodies and how they work and their parts. So I do encounter that a lot, which impacts kids' health.
Right, we're going to come back to that in just a second. Jack in Brighton has a question on what we're allowed to say and not say about different medical products. Go ahead, Jack. Jack, are you there?
I'm here on the car.
Yeah, please be careful.
Radio. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hear me? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. No, in the olden days, I remember on TV talk shows and this and that, people would steer away from mentioning products. They'd slip and say, oh, I use Prel hair cleaner. Oops, am I allowed to say that? Wasn't there some sort of rule, maybe FCC or something, where they weren't allowed to do that?
Yeah, the short answer is no. As far as I know.
Okay.
Yeah, as far as I know. I don't know that that has changed, but it's a good question, and Jack, thank you for that. And so what I want to turn to our guests, both doctors in studio, is clearly Dr. Oz is allowed to talk about specific products. In fact, he talks about green coffee bean extract supplements, something called Gardesia cambogia that he said was the big miracle fat-busting cure. He called it the number one miracle in a bottle, a kind of fat-busting flower. Raspberry ketones. Yeah, I mean, he talks about different products. And not only is that okay, but one of the things that, at least as I understand, is the FDA doesn't have very much authority to investigate supplements unless people start getting sick. Is that right, Doc?
Yeah, that's a really great point, Evan. One of the things I try to do with my patients is, help them understand the limits of, my ability to provide advice. The products that you just mentioned are all, over the counter, and they don't carry the same, level of scrutiny and review by the FDA that prescription products bring.
Okay.
Yeah, and let's remember the kind of the pseudoscience that goes along with this. I think that a lot of these products he talks about, there are some quote unquote studies that go with it. It might be a study that looks at 15 people over a month and what happened in that time, which in the medical community we wouldn't really consider that a robust study. So technically there might be some numbers that say it's a little helpful, but when you really dig down into the facts of it, it's not something most physicians would back.
Yeah, that's such an important point. And so to Jack's question, what Dr. Murray is laying out is exactly what Dr. Oz kind of said to Congress. If you watch the extended back and forth that he had with a number of members of Congress, he would say, well, there was some study, or there was the beginning or early trials, but not any sort of definitive science, or sometimes a study on mice only, or a study on, so studies that aren't large sample sizes or fully defined. And that's why he conceded the point to Senator McCaskill. That, okay, well, these aren't really scientifically grounded, but I believe in them. And so, Jack, he can do that. And then, to Dr. Cole's point, unless people really start getting sick, the FDA's hands are a little bit tied. Should that change, by the way?
Well, I think, frankly, the FDA resources would be overwhelmed if they were asked to, review the efficacy and safety, of over-the-counter products and supplements. I'm pretty confident they have their hands full just dealing with prescription products at this time.
That's such a good point. And Dr. Murray, we talk about manpower. We talk about just the importance of doctor's time. And you guys have to divide your own time and want to see as much as of the patients as you can. Imagine the FDA just chasing supplements all day.
Right. And the fact that they're not regulated also means that there's really no guarantee of what's in that pill. That has clearly been well studied, that you might not be getting as much of the ingredient, or maybe there is an active ingredient that you weren't expecting in there.
Well, on that subject, Noel in Rochester has a story to share with us. Go ahead, Noel.
An observation which I don't know a lot of details about, but my wife lost a coworker at work through taking supplements, and the cause of death was the interaction of all the supplements she was taking. And I'm always kind of curious about how Oprah gets in trouble with the Cattlemen's Association, and then Dr. Oz appears on a program that she produces, and he's got the credentials to make comments about the safety of things that you eat that she didn't have, which got her into trouble. That's enough for now. I'll take your response on the air.
Well, Noel, thank you. First of all, obviously we don't know all the details of your wife losing a coworker, and everyone is sorry to hear that. And so, I certainly can't ask the doctors to be specific about that kind of a case. But Dr. Cole, can we see serious health complications just from supplements?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It is a common question, that I get in the office. Hey, doc, is it okay for me to utilize the following supplements? I try to tell them that again, because they're not prescription products. I don't have a lot of experience with them. I can't really tell them much about the products. It's interesting. I spend a lot of time encouraging people to speak with their pharmacists. The clinical pharmacists in our community have, information generally available that, will look for those interactions if those studies exist. And I would say that for a fair number of supplements, the studies just simply don't exist.
Hmm. Yeah, and remember, just recently we had the homeopathic, was it teething tablets, recalled because they had belladonna in them, which is certainly a very potent, powerful thing that we don't want babies getting.
What is belladonna?
It's, I don't know the class of the medication, but I mean, it's something that can completely kind of dysregulate how a baby works. It's just, mm-hmm. It can be a powerful chemical that should not just be in a child's system. I thought to have some pain control benefits. But I definitely remember in medical school, a person dying from liver failure because they had bought some teas, an unregulated tea. And so these things happen. Plus, if you already have some other medical problems, say you have some liver disease, or if you have some kidney problems, taking these supplements might be in levels that your body just can't handle. So a lot of stuff to discuss with your doctor.
Before I grab another phone call, again, just on the subject of supplements, and listeners, if you've got more comments or questions on that, you can share them. I've learned a lot just kind of preparing for this program and listening to the doctors on the program today. But Dr. Oz, again, who is we're talking about because the White House just promoted him to the President's Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition, has for years touted, quote, supplements that can blast your fat and kill your cravings, end quote. I mean, Dr. Cole, do you believe there's a single supplement that can blast your fat and kill your cravings?
Evan, absolutely not. My suspicion is if there was really something like that out there, we'd all know about it.
Yeah, and maybe we wouldn't have the obesity problem.
A great point. We wouldn't be struggling with the obesity issue that we do.
And then, Dr. Murray, so when Congress confronts him and says, you said there are supplements that can blast your fat and kill your cravings, you've talked about raspberry ketones, green coffee bean extract supplements, miracle in a bottle, fat-busting flowers. Dr. Oz tends to say, well, what I'm talking about are short-term aids for people to get their lives going in a different direction. He certainly doesn't say that on the show. Does that absolve him to you?
No, but I think, again, I think he's kind of the canary in the coal mine. And there's so much more to this, and this is so much more widespread with regards to where people are getting this information. So yes, he's certainly very popular, but if you look at all the Facebook posts and the other nutritionalists and other people out there that are doing a very similar thing, even if we were to nip that in the bud, there's still a lot of information very similar to his out there being transmitted to people.
Hmm. And before I grab another phone call, do you have any issue with the White House then promoting him to this council then, Dr. Murray?
To what end? I just don't necessarily get it as far as how they think he's going to be helpful. Could it be very helpful as far as we know he can transmit a message? But I guess I'd worry that might not be the best message that he's going to transmit.
Okay. Dr. Cole, any issue with the White House's decision in this regard?
Right. I suppose it depends on the purpose of that committee, that commission. He's a very personable individual. He's very charismatic. So if his presence on this committee is to draw attention, then it was an excellent choice. If they're looking for, folks who, truly, can represent, science, and factual approaches to care, perhaps there are other choices out there that could be made.
I would like to see him appointed to a president's council on cardiac care. As someone who's had a non-open heart surgery myself, I would pick his brain all day on that. I just don't think I would think that there is a magical supplement or a magic bean. Manon in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Manon.
Hi, Evan. I would like to say that, first of all, that my mother, when she was about 40 years old, she had a severe stroke,
And
Manon, wait. Sounds like you're speaking to us through a towel. I need you to speak directly into the receiver or we will not be able to hear you. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can. Yep, that's good. Go ahead.
Okay, this is better. My mother had a stroke when she was 40 years old. I was only 18. I struggled. I studied psychology and science and tried to help her. She took allopathic drugs, and she was terrible. She was very sick, but she was throwing up. And my mother and my father, my father and myself, we went to different doctors, and, we were in India and Bangladesh, and we found this incredible doctor, Dr. Munshi, and I was so happy that over the years, the cure was slow, but it was sure. My mother is now 80 years old, and she has great memory, although she had bleeding of the brain. That's one example. Secondly, I'd like to say that I talked to Dr. Pearson at Strong Hospital, where he was having a conference at the library. There was only four or five people there. And I was in the audience, and he was talking about $7 million to build another research center. And I just told him that, why don't you just spend money on, trying to help human beings or the population to get preventive medicine, like education for good nutrition and, other forms of alternative healing like homeopathy and other things. He said I was right, that in Argentina, heart disease is zero because they eat fish and vegetables and rice every day. And thirdly, Evan, I'd like to say that people have a choice. They can go to homeopathy, alternative healing, or, allopathic. As for me, I only took one medicine recently, and I feel that I fainted on the bus several times with a chlorthalidone, and I don't like allopathic drugs, and I become afraid of, these physicians and doctors. So those are three things I'd like to say, Thank you, Evan.
Manon, thank you for this. So this is interesting, and we're going to put our panelists on the spot here. We've got Dr. Bob Cole, Medical Director for the Rochester Regional Health Primary Care and Ambulatory Specialties Institute, and Dr. Elizabeth Murray, who's a pediatrician at Golisano Children's Hospital. Because Manon brings up alternative medicine, homeopathy, and Dr. Oz has promoted a lot of those kinds of ideas. But it's not just Dr. Oz. I mean, this stuff's everywhere. Dr. Oz promotes Reiki, that kind of a thing. That kind of stuff's everywhere. There is not science that tends to back homeopathy. I'm making a blanket statement, and our doctors will disabuse me of this if I'm wrong. But there is not science that backs it up. I was recently talking to a British friend who is a doctor, and he told me that in the UK, they have a much easier time just being snarky and blunt about homeopathy. But when he's in the United States, he has to kowtow to public sentiment for it more, which I thought was an interesting cultural observation. But he says, we make fun of homeopathy in the UK, and here you guys sell it by the boatload. Again, I don't know if that generalization is true. But this is where it's tough. So I'll start with Dr. Cole. How often do you encounter patients who want to take homeopathy or want to try homeopathic remedies, so-called remedies, mm-hmm. and what do you tell them about that?
Yeah, I encounter this quite a bit. It's not uncommon at all, for those types of questions to come my way. Kind of repeat what you've just said, which is, it's my understanding that with a lot of homeopathic, solutions, there just aren't really large, prospective, randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind studies, proving that these approaches are, in fact, beneficial.
There's some studies that prove the opposite.
Right. And in fact, I doubt the dollars will ever be spent to prove those things.
Okay. Dr. Murray?
So I'm actually an osteopathic physician. I'm a DO. And so the original kind of tenets of osteopathic medicine is an appreciation of the mind, body, and spirit. Here at the University of Rochester, we say the biopsychosocial model. And so I definitely agree with that, but I also 100% agree that medications are helpful. Well-studied medications can certainly be helpful. We see larger medical institutions throughout the country start to have these wellness centers and things like that. And so there is certainly something to be said for other therapies that might complement traditional medical therapies to improve an overall well-being of a person. They cancer centers having massage therapists and along those lines. And I think that there's something to be said for that, because if it brings you happiness and it brings you comfort in addition to all the other things you're going through, that's probably pretty reasonable. I get very, very concerned, though, when somebody is making a judgment of, I want to completely abandon one treatment avenue in lieu of something else. And that something else is usually not studied, homeopathic medicine being one that's actually studied and disproven. So, and again, in my world as a pediatrician, I remember people are making decisions about children's lives. And so I usually turn to the parent and say, you know, what is your goal? There's a symptom that's clearly worrying you and we want to fix that symptom. And so if we can have a conversation about what that symptom is, and most of the time there's a misunderstanding of the severity of that symptom or the problems it can lead to. And if we have that conversation, if we have the time to have that conversation, we can work it out.
Can homeopathy work as placebo?
I don't know. My guess is probably for a little while, but I don't think the studies have borne that out. But I wouldn't be surprised if you get a little bit of an effect for a little while.
I've definitely seen homeopathy work, you know, in I believe a placebo fashion. You know, I think, you know, any of us who've been in the medical profession for some time, and I've been at it now for a couple of decades, you know, realize that there are limitations to traditional Western medicine. And I have no problem, you know, introducing non-traditional approaches like acupuncture, chiropractic, medical massage, if the patient finds it beneficial in their overall treatment plan. I think, you know, we all take this pledge to write first, do no harm. And as long as these approaches are not, you know, harming our patient, I'm comfortable adding them as an ancillary service.
But not replacing.
Not replacing, right.
Scientifically.
Yeah, allopathic approach.
Okay. And before we get back to the phones, which are lit up now, I want to ask both of you real briefly, because Dr. Oz has promoted Reiki. I don't know much about Reiki. How do you feel about Reiki, Dr. Cole?
Yeah, Reiki is a form of therapeutic touch. I know very, very little about it, other than a couple of my patients and patient family members, you know, have practiced Reiki. I've never personally referred a patient for Reiki services.
If someone said, I'm going to perform Reiki on you, I can help you, your shoulder's aching, you would say?
I would say I would prefer you to see an orthopedic physician first.
Dr. Murray.
Yeah, there's not a lot of room for that probably in my population. Reiki specifically, I think it's pretty painful.
Reiki?
Yeah, is that, or maybe I'm thinking the wrong one.
Just
is this just energy?
Yeah,
is Reiki just energy?
Transferring energy is what I understand. Again,
okay.
I don't know much.
Yeah, then I'm wrong.
But I don't believe it to be a truly manipulative intervention.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Would you trust Reiki, Dr. Burr?
Would I trust it?
Yeah. To do any good for you?
No.
Okay. No. All right, listeners, if you're on the line, let's get our only break of the hour. Don, Mike, Rick, we're coming back to your phone calls. We're talking to Drs. Cole and Murray about medicine, about how we can be better medicine consumers and understand. You know, I take Dr. Oz's point when he says it's hard to get viewers if you don't use big flowery language, but let's not sell people a false bill of goods here. Let's make sure that the information is good. And so we'll take your phone calls, we'll take your emails, and I will ask both of our doctors, when they do encounter sort of junk science or pseudo-medicine, how they work, if they do work, to disabuse patients of that, to work with them to understand a different way, and how receptive people are to that. I'm curious about that. So let's get our only break. Come back to your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, the NFL has a new policy on what players should do during the national anthem. The ownership did not want players to kneel anymore in protest. They said it was hurting sales, the gate was hurting their ratings, hurting their relationship to fans. So what is the new policy? We explore it, and we get feedback from a lot of different communities, and we want to hear from you as a fan next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me get Mike in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, thanks. Great show, by the way. I think that the hiring of Dr. Oz represents something that I'd like to hear about from your panel, and that's the disavowal of science, the calling into question of the real value of science, including medical science. And I see that in my personal life. I have friends who are quite bright. They're quite well-educated, master's degrees, well-read, and yet when a doctor tells them something they don't want to know or says that they need to have a treatment, they are unwilling to believe that physician. A little bit of cynicism or criticality might be warranted, but they then turn, in some cases, to supplements or spiritual belief or something of that nature. It just seems like the sciences and medical science have been downgraded, especially in the past 20 or 30 years, and in particular by this administration. Otherwise, why hire somebody like Dr. Oz?
Well, Mike, thank you for the phone call and for the sentiment, and I know our guests are going to have a lot to say on that. His phone call comes right when Warren tweets at us and says, nobody listens to the government about health and nutrition anymore anyway. Well, uh-oh, if that is true, but Mike is saying that he's perceiving more of an attack on expertise, more of a mocking of expertise that falls right in line with some recent conversations we've had on this program. And Dr. Murray herself, had an interesting tweet about, sometimes people trust doctors online because of how many followers they have, not because of how well-rounded they expect their background to be. So I'll start with you on those grounds. What do you make of Warren saying nobody trusts the government anymore about health and nutrition anyway? Mike saying, he's got friends who they hear a doctor's diagnosis and they go, I don't like it. That's not what I wanted to hear. Are we not trusting expertise, and are we not trusting medical expertise anymore?
We've realigned what we consider expertise. So, we've become a reality TV population. And somehow that ability to be on television gives you credibility, which is kind of bizarre. But I definitely see it after I'm on TV or on a show and working a shift and somebody will say, oh, I saw you. And then you just kind of get the sense of whatever she says is going to be fine. Or, we've had lots of different times where I've experienced that where, a child will present with a certain complaint and then the parent will say, I remember you talking about this on TV. I got it. We're good. But they came to the emergency department because they were afraid. They already had that information in their head, but they were concerned. But then they saw me there and they realized, all right, we're going to be okay, which is bizarre. But on the other hand, I think that historically scientists and physicians were not really good at spreading our message in a clear way. And so for me, the reason I choose to be involved in communicating with the public on such a public platform is because I think transferring that information in an accurate, clear way is just so critically important. Because if we're talking in ways that's so confusing or so dry or just so uninteresting, then we are going to lose our people, or we're going to lose our patients to the dynamic speakers who have something colorful and powerful and wonderful to say in a way that's clear to them. We owe it to the science and we owe it to our patients to make sure that we are doing a good job of explaining things in a way that people understand. And again, going back to what I said before of rebuilding that relationship. And if it's meeting people where they are, if part of building that relationship is having a social media presence because your families are at home and they have some time and they're curious about your thoughts and you happen to have a Facebook page where you post your response to something in the news and they're getting to know you better. And so when you do have that face-to-face, they are going to feel like they know you better. They have some more insight to you. And so you are building a relationship. It's just in a different way.
Dr. Cole.
Yeah, I think, I agree completely with Dr. Murray. I think one of the, concerns I have is that, due to the presence of, media physicians, media healthcare, providers, there has been a blurring, of the lines. It is really, as I said at the start of the show, really hard, I think, for patients, families, consumers to understand, what is that individual's top priority? Is it my health or is it the ability to market, promote, and sell more of a given product? I think we do a real disservice to our society as a whole when we turn our back on science.
Well, I'm seeing a number of comments from listeners saying that elevating Dr. Oz to a president's council is further affirmation that we really have become a celebrity society. And the interesting irony is, and again, I don't offer this as a political observation, just a general observation. When Barack Obama was running for president, his political opponents loved to say, well, he's just a celebrity. That's all he's known for. He's just a celebrity. Well, now the president himself is definitely a celebrity. Dr. Oz is a celebrity doctor who is being elevated to a higher position by the White House. You have people like Ben Carson leading HUD, without a whole lot of background on that. Often our diplomats are people who are either big names in different fields but don't have a whole lot of knowledge of diplomacy. So we've really become a celebrity society, whether we liked it or not. And I wonder what that does say. But maybe that's a whole separate conversation. Let me keep going with your phone calls. We've got a lot to work through. Don in East Rochester next. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. You pretty much summed up what I was going to say, but I might add that this is a president who takes pills to regrow hair on his bald head. Is it any wonder that he would hire someone like Dr. Oz to, admittedly, it's a rather obscure position, but Dr. Oz is a celebrity show host, and Donald Trump is a reality show host. He's turned the whole administration into one big reality show. Is it any surprise? That's all I can really say.
But hold on, Don. Let me defend the president here. You're saying he takes a pill for his hair? I haven't actually heard that. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I've heard that, but I don't know whether it's actually true or not, but I have heard it.
Well, you better verify that. Let's not be just casting aspersions on the man with the golden hair. And I will tell you, as someone who's follically challenged myself, people do a lot of wild things when they try to figure out how to prevent the moonwalk up their scalp. So Donald Trump and I would have something in common there.
There's nothing wrong with a moonwalk up and down the scalp, and it can be very attractive if you know how to do it.
You're darn right.
He's too vain to allow that to happen. He's too vain to admit that he's going bald, like a great number of other men in the world are.
All right.
He's too vain for all. So that's why I believe that perhaps he did take some pills to regrow hair on his dome.
All right. I feel the envy, Don.
Can we flag the tape? Evan Dawson just said he had something in common with Donald Trump.
I do. I have something very much in common with the president. If the president is, in fact, and I don't know if it's fake news, about the whole hair thing. I will also say Rogaine's a great product if you're in business in Rogaine. Take it one time and you must take it every day for the rest of your life. That is a great product. Anytime you can get somebody in the door once and they must do it forever, I want to buy stock in your company. That's brilliant, whether it works or not. Don, I take the broader point you're making, and I appreciate the call. But go easy on the president's fabulous hair. I can hear your envy oozing through the phone. Let me get back to Rick in Pittsburgh next. Go ahead, Rick.
Hi, I was listening to, I love your show, incidentally. I try to listen to it as much as possible. And I'm in the wellness business. I've been an acupuncturist for 33 years. And a couple of facts, believe it or not, Highland Hospital started out as a homeopathic hospital. If you go over to the Highlands of Pittsburgh, which is, my in-laws live there, it's called Hahnemann Drive is one of the streets. And that is the founder, the German physician that founded homeopathy in Germany, I think back in the 1880s. And the second point was something that someone said earlier about possible negative T interaction or a negative herbal interaction or supplement interaction. And I knew the physician who worked on this back in 1996-97. 100,000 people died of properly prescribed medication, allopathic medications. So there's so many factors, and I think Dr. Murray may have said there's so many factors that factor into, we don't know the whole case of why somebody may have a negative interaction. I think she mentioned liver disease or kidney disease, which I agree with. And we've been invited, my wife and I are both acupuncturists, we own a wellness center. We've been invited to Strong to speak to their medical residents. We did it for like 4 or 5 years. And most of them wanted to know, they get patients, as your guests have said, that come in and are taking herbs or are getting acupuncture. And they just wanted to have the residents who are going on to their later in graduate and go become a physician to be informed. So that's why we were invited. So, and we were also asked to do a CME's continuing medication, medical education for nurses that we're seeing in the University Health Services, people coming in, students from the U of R who were taking herbs, and they wanted to just be well informed. So there's so many different variations of things, but the one thing I agree with, the foundation of Chinese medicine, and I think it's kind of generally kind of what we're seeing here, is everything in moderation, including moderation. I tell my patients every day, I said, I don't live in China. I said, I do Chinese medicine, but I'm in the United States. I said, I need to interface with allopathic Western physicians, or it's chiropractic and massage. And somebody said something on Reiki earlier in your show, and I would say probably there's I don't know percentage-wise, but most of the Reiki that got popped in this country were through nurses who were trained in it, doing it in hospitals.
Hmm.
Not Reiki practitioners out in the world, but a lot of nurses were trained in Reiki. All of the United States held it in several major cities in the U.S., and many of the hospitals that I had privileges and treated people in had Reiki practitioners happen to be registered nurses.
Well, Rick, thanks for all that. I appreciate that. And I... I plead ignorance on Reiki, and that's my own fault. I need to do a lot more reading on that. And so, listeners, if you have experience with Reiki in any direction, let me know. Send me an email, edawson@wxxi.org. I'd like to know. Some thoughts from Drs. Murray and Dr. Cole on some. I didn't even really know the Highland Hospital background. That's not something I part of the history I know.
I didn't know. I just looked it up as we were sitting here. Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Is that right?
Yeah. The Highland Hospital webpage has a whole big background information on it.
And it sounds like, again, that Rick's making the point that's important here, that this is a layered thing here. When we talk about medicine and people's approach, and I'm guilty, too, of sometimes overgeneralizing, that he is reminding us that people come in, sometimes they have questions, sometimes medical residents have questions, sometimes people who encounter doctors have questions. You object to anything you heard there, Dr.
No, Cole? No, not at all. As I think about this, I certainly subscribe to the germ theory of disease, and that's the core of how I approach my patients. But I think there is a role for these additional services. I don't think any of us would argue that acupuncture in particular is really being rapidly integrated into the portfolio of traditional medicine today.
Interesting.
Yeah, we started this conversation by saying there's no one magic bullet, and I think that applies to all of these therapies as well. If we can't say there's a magic pill, so we can't say that there's a magical acupuncture or a magical massage technique either, right? All of these things potentially could be used in conjunction. I've said it before on the show, I have high blood pressure. Taking the medicine isn't going to be the only thing that's going to control my blood pressure. I have to be careful about my activity level and other things, right? There's not just one thing that's going to fix me, even though I use a medication, it's not the only thing. So it's very true for everything that we do in life. Okay. And for the residents and for the teaching, I think it's incredibly powerful, because imagine as a patient, if you ask your doctor about something, you want your doctor to say either, this is my understanding of it, what's your understanding, so we're on the same page, or I don't know a lot about that, let's learn about it together, let's work it through, instead of having a physician that says, I don't know about that, so it must not be important, next. Of course, we want people to be able to embrace new information.
All right, speaking of, let's get Keith in Farmington, who wants to weigh in on this. Go ahead, Keith.
Hey, Evan, your caller, the president takes Propecia for male pattern baldness.
Is that the same thing as finasteride? Is that the...
That's the generic name.
Okay, yep, I'm seeing that in the Washington Post. Megan Mack, producer, just flagged that for us. So, yep, go ahead.
All right. Now, this guy, Oz, I think what may be happening, we're opening the doorway for all our alternative medicines. And before you start yelling and screaming at me, I put acupuncture, I put chiropractor care, I put feng shui, a lot of things in the alternative method book or whatever you want to call it, because you may have an anecdote where I went to acupuncture and I feel way better, therefore it works. Like your doctor said, anything should be subject to a double-blind study over a length of time and with significant amount of people to prove empirically that it works. If you look at the history of chiropractic care and you think about it, you're right. Massaging, if you have your back and they're going to align your lower spine again and it feels better, well, is it because they aligned your spine or is it because you had somewhat of a massage therapist effect to it? I think what's going to happen, he's going to have the president's ear. If the president does something that makes his orange skin go away, guess what? We're all going to be able to get that at our doctor because the president's going to say, yep, it works, because it worked for me. And before people make any claims, I think you have to show the empirical study.
Yeah,
and back it up.
And Keith, it just sounds like you're underwater. We've got like this epidemic of phone calls coming from like tunnels and underwater sources today. But thank you for the phone call. And on that last point, let me turn to both doctors in studio to kind of build on Keith's last point. So I deal with migraines, and I remember one time I had to go give a presentation at Colgate, and maybe an hour before I left, I get a migraine coming on, and I'm thinking, I cannot be shut down for this. I can't reschedule this. I've got to find a way. And so in that moment, I called a friend who does acupuncture. I've never had acupuncture done. And I said, I'll try anything. And let's do it. And 45 minutes later, I walked out of her office and I felt like I could dunk a basketball. And it was really remarkable. And I had a great night and boom. The next time I've got a migraine coming on, I'm going. I'm going to do the acupuncture again. So I did, and this is maybe a month later. And no impact, no change. Now, that is a sample size of two, N2. That is not a study. And the danger I could have had walking out of there the first time was, well, telling everybody, acupuncture cures migraines. Now, it might have very well impacted me that day. It itself may have. I don't know. Or the placebo effect, the mind's an amazing thing. Or it might have been the interaction of other foods I was eating, or my mood, or luck. I don't know. But Keith's point is sometimes in this country we used to do a really bad job of realizing small sample sizes do not mean largely applicable ideas. And I wonder what you think about that, Dr.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. The strength of our recommendations is, it needs to correlate with the studies that back these products and approaches up. So for example, I think Keith was alluding to this, and Evan, you just, gave us an example that's considered a case study, and case studies don't really provide us with a lot of strong, supportive information about whether to recommend approaches or not. Expert opinion is another, similar approach that doesn't provide us with a ton of strength behind our recommendations. Small studies, retrospective as opposed to prospective studies, recommendations that come from usual practice. We could probably sit here and name a list the length of our arm of approaches that just don't provide the same strength as the randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind, prospective study I mentioned at the start of the show.
Okay,
yeah,
Dr. Murray.
I would say about 90% of the articles I've done for People magazine are all been reactionary to viral social media posts about something awful happening medically to somebody, and we need to really worry about this. And that's very interesting because 100% of them were things that in reality don't really need to worry about. They're incredibly rare, or there was some other unusual situation that went together with what the person was presenting with. It just, but again, if that's showing up in your social media feeds all the time of this awful thing happened, and then now you have a similar symptom or your child does, all of a sudden you're thinking, maybe my child's going to die as well, just like that other child. So, it really changes our perspective. We have access to all of this information that makes things that are incredibly rare seem and feel much more common.
Well, as we get ready to wrap the show, I want to ask both of our guests an important way to conclude here, which is on how we work through conversations, whether it's them with their patients, us with family members, to help people sort out bad information. And I admit, back in 2014, when Dr. Oz was called in front of Congress and sort of dressed down repeatedly, I thought, this is probably the end of his television career, and maybe he will sort of embarrassedly shrink away, stay practicing in the cardiac side, of which he is phenomenal. No, when the president last week appointed Dr. Oz to this national council, I thought, he doesn't still have a show, does he? He does. I didn't even know this. I thought, there's no shame for anybody. It's impossible. And so I kind of have this silly idea that when we expose things and shame things that deserve shame, that there is accountability, and it, maybe not. But let me ask both of our guests, when you meet people who really are beholden to bad information or ideas, you want to be constructive. You don't want to tear them down. And I could do better than that myself. But how do you work with them?
Yeah, I think, as Dr. Murray indicated a little bit earlier, I like to, ask patients and their families, what are your goals? What is it that you're trying to accomplish? Sometimes a lot can be learned from, understanding the answer to that question. And then the other thing that I always encourage people to do is, regardless of what you've heard, what you've read, what you've seen, I think it's really important to have a personal conversation, with your physician. We can peel away a lot of the glitz and glamour, when we're in the exam room with individuals.
Okay. Dr. Murray.
Yeah. Meet people where they are. What is it about this situation that has you so concerned? Or what is it about this piece of information that is so reassuring to you? And explain how you would then think about the scenario or the information. Because a lot of times, again, it's a misperception of what's going on. And when you have that conversation, people start to realize, all right, okay, my doctor is hearing me, and I really believe that she understands the situation. And you start to realize that your doctor wants you and your children to be healthy. We're all in this to have healthy people.
Have you had patients thank you for helping them see things a different way?
Yes, definitely.
so that we're not so obstinate as a people. Dr. Cole?
Yeah. No, I don't want to stand in the way of people's goals. And sometimes non-traditional approaches, you know, help them reach those goals. But certainly I've had many conversations over the years that have redirected people back to traditional approaches that, you know, ultimately proved to be very beneficial for them.
Yeah. And we didn't get much on the vaccines, but let me at least sneak that in the last 40 seconds or so. Are things any better than they were 2-3 years ago? We've had conversations over the years now about people pushing back, parents pushing back, the Sears schedule, all kinds of other things. Where's sort of the landscape with vaccines now? What are you seeing?
The important message is still to this day, the overwhelming majority of families continue to vaccinate. The numbers have dropped a little bit, but 96% of families, for the most part, are still vaccinating. We are seeing the return of measles, especially in certain parts of the country where those numbers are starting to drop. So it's still definitely a very large issue. But again, the overwhelming majority of people know that vaccines are safe and they're doing it for their kids.
And when people push and don't want to do it, can you usually change their mind?
I run about 50-50.
Wow. Okay. Thank you, as always, for being here.
Happy to be here.
You want to tell people to vaccinate? You want to remind them again?
Flu shot this year, you got it. No nasal spray. Sorry, kids. You're going to have the injectable this year. Just come in here.
Okay. Dr. Elizabeth Murray, Dr. Bob Cole, thank you for taking the time out of your very busy schedules to join us this afternoon. Always good to have you. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, short break. More Connections is coming up.